Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to CBS News Roundup ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Coming up, a push to expand background checks for those buying firearms online and at gun shows.
Won't have saved my son or what happened at Sandy Hook, but it will help in so many other occasions.
The battle over a civil rights era abortion law in Arizona.
I'm ready to do whatever it takes to get the 1864 ban repealed.
In the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keys segment, questions over a fatal police shooting in Chicago where 96 rounds were fired in 41 seconds.
What I'm seeing in the body cam video that's been released is troubling.
I'm Allison Keys in Washington. The nation is continuing to be roiled by shootings at schools, in neighborhoods, and at religious gatherings. Friday in Dallas, parents rushed to a high school where one father says his daughter told him there was an active shooter.
She called me saying that there was an active shooter.
In Memphis Friday, one officer was killed and two others hurt as they checked out a suspicious vehicle.
When officers approached the vehicle, they were fired upon by the occupants inside. Officers then returned fire.
And in Philadelphia on Wednesday, people praying for peace and unity at the end of Ramadan fled as gunshots rang out.
I'm still shaking. Like, I'm nervous. I'm really nervous.
Trash, chairs, a stroller, baby dolls and coolers. Just some of the items that were left behind when people dropped what they were doing and ran for their lives during a shooting at 47th and Wyalusing in West Philadelphia.
And I was like, just another beautiful day. And gunshots just started ringing, and you could see the gun smoke because it was very close.
Witnesses say as the bullets were flying around them, they tried to take cover, especially since they couldn't tell where the bullets were coming from in the first place. In the middle of it, witnesses say kids were getting separated from their parents.
It was like back to back to back to back to back. I see everybody running, the kids running, a little girl ran across the street, she got hit by the car. It was a lot going on.
They're crying. And people had to find their kids. Yes, they had to find their kids, and it was just so senseless. I thought it was firecrackers. I said, whoa, I thought it was firecrackers. But everybody's trampling on each other, falling all over the place because it was senseless.
One young boy posted this message to Citizens app.
Like, this is scary because I almost got shot.
The park was packed with people and vendors, and people say they were celebrating the end of Ramadan until the shooting happened.
We do this festival every year, once a year. And what I'm saying is, we don't want violence. We're trying to promote happiness.
Police could be seen canvassing the area for evidence and shell casings. Many people stood on the outskirts of the massive crime scene in disbelief.
And I cried because I'm saying, why? Why at this scene would something happen when we came for peace and unity? Why would someone want to come up here and do that?
We are also told that there were grief and trauma counselors on scene to help the families and those who attended the event process everything that just happened. Outside of police headquarters, Kerry Corrado, CBS News, Philadelphia.
This is the White House announced final plans this week to expand background checks on would-be gun buyers. CBS's Linda Kenyon joins us with details.
Well, what it does is it closes the so-called gun show loophole, requiring thousands of more gun dealers to run background checks on buyers. Now, presently, those licensed gun dealers who sell at brick-and-mortar stores or those who sell, as opposed to those who sell at gun shows or online, only some of them require background checks in all cases. And that would be those who are licensed gun dealers who sell guns in stores. Well, this closing of the gun show loophole would change the definition, if you will, of a licensed gun dealer, thereby making it necessary for those who sell guns online and those who sell guns at gun shows, for example, now classified as gun dealers, and therefore they must conduct the background checks. This is going to expand the number of licensed gun dealers by an estimated 23,000 in the United States. And that means that there will be tighter controls over who can and who cannot own a gun. And as we know in previous cases, there have been people who have committed crimes, in some cases mass shootings, who obtained their guns legally at gun shows, but they did not have to undergo background checks.
People who are supporting this say it's going to save lives. Does the White House think so?
The White House does think so. And that's one of the reasons why it decided to go ahead with this new rule, which is a part of the 2022 Safer Communities Act. And that means that if this new definition goes into effect, which according to all signs it will, once it's processed in the Federal Register this week, it will then take effect in 30 days. And the White House is justifying this change of definition, this expansion of gun background checks, citing, for example, the 25th anniversary, which is next week, of the mass shooting at Columbine High School, which was carried out with weapons that were purchased through the gun show loophole. There was also a second shooting back in 2019 in Midland and Odessa, Texas, where a man killed seven people and wounded dozens more. A background check had stopped that shooter from purchasing a gun at a sporting goods store. However, he later purchased an AR-15 from an unlicensed seller that he had met online, and therefore he purchased it legally because of the loophole.
That's CBS's Linda Kenyon. The parents of the Michigan school shooter, the first in the U.S. to be held criminally responsible for their child's school shooting, were sentenced this week. The judge hopes this will act as a deterrent.
The blood of our children is on your hands, too.
One by one, family members of the four students killed at Oxford High School addressed James and Jennifer Crumley just before they were sentenced.
You have failed your son, and you have failed us all.
And why you are running away from your son and your responsibilities. I was forced to do the worst possible thing a parent could do. I was forced to say goodbye to my Madison.
The Crumbleys were found guilty of involuntary manslaughter earlier this year. Separate juries found they willfully failed to prevent their son Ethan from bringing a handgun to his Michigan school in 2021 and opening fire. Today, they each asked for leniency and forgiveness.
I am sorry for your loss as a result of what my son did.
We were good parents.
But the judge sentenced them to a minimum of 10 years in prison minus time already served.
These convictions confirm repeated acts or lack of acts that could have halted an oncoming runaway train.
During their trials, prosecutors painted the couple as absent parents more concerned with themselves than their son's mental health, and accused them of gross negligence for buying a Sig Sauer handgun as a present for Ethan 4 days before the shooting and then failing to secure it. Craig Schilling, the father of Justin, said the families have been waiting for this moment.
I feel that there was some justice here today, for sure. The sentence was appropriate, and I'm glad that we received that.
Andres Gutierrez, CBS News, Pontiac, Michigan.
Coming up, the abortion issue and the 2024 campaign. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. NFL star and actor O.J. Simpson, cleared of killing his ex-wife and a friend in the 1990s, died Wednesday after a battle with cancer. CBS's Danya Backus.
O.J. Simpson's death following a battle with cancer came almost 3 decades after the killing of his ex-wife Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman.
The door turned on Mr. Simpson from being American hero to being arguably the most vilified man in America.
Carl Douglas was a member of Simpson's so-called Dream Team, along with defense attorneys Johnny Cochran and Robert Kardashian.
He had a very complicated legacy.
The brutal stabbings outside Nicole Brown Simpson's Los Angeles home in the summer of 1994 were followed days later by the slow-speed white Bronco chase that captivated the nation.
The murders.
Right.
There was the Bronco chase.
And
the there was the trial.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Verdict.
There was the acquittal.
Millions watched again as the former football star turned film actor and TV pitchman was acquitted in the case called the Trial of the Century.
Not guilty of the crime of murder.
There are big moments during the trial, like when he tries on the gloves and there are the theatrics of whether they fit or not.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
In 1997, a separate civil trial jury found Simpson liable for the deaths and ordered him to pay more than $33 million to the families of Brown and Goldman. Simpson was convicted of armed robbery and other felonies in 2008 after a confrontation with sports memorabilia dealers. He served 9 years in a Nevada prison.
I am sorry. I didn't mean to steal anything from anybody.
In a statement, Ron Goldman's father and sister said that with Simpson's death, the hope for true accountability has ended. Danya Backus, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Turning now to abortion, as Arizona State Supreme Court upholds a Civil War era law that bans all abortions except to save the life of the mother. The issue is already huge this presidential election year as the Biden campaign launches a massive ad buy and sends Vice President Harris to the state, and former President Trump struggles for clarity in his statements on abortion rights. All of this pointing to what some call a chaotic patchwork of laws since Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022.
The busiest abortion clinic in Arizona, according to Dr. Gabriel Goodrick, seeing some 350 patients a month. But now Goodrick says she's worried about what could happen.
We provide an essential health care service for the patients of Arizona. And if we can't provide that, they're going to be lost. They're going to be in danger.
Efforts Wednesday in the state legislature to repeal the newly revived law were shut down by Republicans. The Arizona House Speaker saying Democrats are so eager to enshrine in our state constitution a right to kill unborn children. We are going to take the time needed to listen to our constituents. Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs.
I'm ready to do whatever it takes to get the 1864 ban repealed.
The group Arizona for Abortion Access says it's gathered enough signatures for a November ballot initiative allowing abortions up to around 24 weeks. Nurse Ashley Fearing has been helping the effort.
It is far more dangerous to make abortions illegal and have abortions go underground, because I will tell you that people will not stop getting abortions.
An anti-abortion rights group is mounting a campaign against the ballot initiative.
This amendment would be absolutely catastrophic for the health of women and girls.
Most abortions take place at 15 weeks or less. Only a very small number take place 21 weeks or later. The timeline of when the new law could take effect is unclear. Dr. Goodrick says when it does, it will be a dangerous time for women.
It will harm a tremendous amount of Arizonans, and it'll be terrible.
Janet Shamley in CBS News, Phoenix.
The Biden administration this week laid out the first national standard limiting so-called forever chemicals in drinking water. CBS's Ben Tracy tells us the move is meant to prevent thousands of deaths.
Everyone should be able to turn on their tap and trust that the water that they're drinking and giving their children is safe.
EPA Administrator Michael Regan announced the new drinking water standard in North Carolina, where in 2017 it was discovered a chemical plant had been contaminating the local water supply by dumping PFAS into a nearby river.
It was gut-wrenching to when we first learned about our contamination crisis.
Emily Donovan lives near the river and has been fighting for PFAS regulations for years.
How concerned have you been about the water you and your children have been drinking all these years?
I mean, I've been terrified. No mother wants to be told that she contaminated her children.
An estimated 200 million Americans are exposed to PFAS chemicals through drinking water. These forever chemicals last for thousands of years and are used in everything from food packaging to water-resistant clothing and cosmetics. They've been linked to certain cancers, liver damage, and developmental issues in children.
You can't smell these chemicals. You can't taste them. You can't see them. So that's why these new rules are so important.
Now, water utilities must reduce PFAS levels to near zero in the next 5 years. The EPA says 6 to 10% of the 66,000 public drinking water systems will likely need to make changes to comply. That could cost billions of dollars. The American Water Works Association, which represents the utilities, says polluters, not communities, should be held responsible. But for Emily Donovan,
this, I think, is a monumental change in how we look at public water in America.
What matters is making the water safe to drink. Ben Tracy, CBS News, Los Angeles.
There's a new report out raising concerns about Lunchables, those prepackaged box meals popular with parents for their convenience.
The popular longtime lunch staple being called out by Consumer Reports for what it says were high levels of sodium, lead, and other heavy metals found in store-bought versions. The group even asking the federal government to take them out of the menus of millions of kids through the federal school lunch program.
How high were the levels of lead and cadmium that you saw?
It ranged from as low as 7% to as high as over 70. But it's important to note that the versions that are made available for the school lunch program were in the 70% range.
Consumer Reports said one package tested at 74% of the maximum lead allowed per day in California under what it calls the most protective state law.
There's no safe level for lead for kids. And so when you're exposing this much to them at such an early age, it can really increase the risk later on in life.
In a statement, Kraft Heinz, the manufacturer of Lunchables products, said lead and cadmium occur naturally in the environment and called the Consumer Reports study misleading, causing undue concern over the safety of our products, something we take seriously. All our products tested well below the acceptable limits. Dietitian Arlene Stein.
What do you recommend parents do?
One option would be that you try and balance out the rest of the day with healthier things, you know, not having juice with it, drinking water.
Developing healthy habits that will last for years to come. Nancy Chin, CBS News, New York.
Coming up, famine begins in Gaza. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. Children in Sudan are starving to death as that nation's army and a rival military faction continue their civil war. Doctors Without Borders says in some parts of the famine-stricken country, one child dies every 2 hours. This woman, speaking through an interpreter, says three of her four children are dead.
I couldn't afford to take them to hospital. The pharmacy demanded too much money. My first child died on the way home from there, and the second child died after 6 days. The baby fell sick and died 3 days later.
Israel said Friday it had opened a new crossing for aid trucks into northern Gaza as it faces criticism from the United Nations and the U.S. over what many are calling a humanitarian crisis in the wake of the October 7th terror attack by Hamas. Israel says it has sent in more than 1,900 trucks to Gaza over the last week, but the U.N. says the increase isn't being felt because distributing aid is difficult. USAID Chief Samantha Power told a House committee Thursday that famine is already underway in Gaza.
In the north, 1 in 3 kids are suffering from malnutrition. The reports of famine also spreading to the south make sense because so little assistance has gotten in commensurate to the needs of more than 2 million people.
Back in the U.S., a group of diverse women is working to find common ground despite the rift in their cultures brought about by the war between Israel and Hamas. CBS's Lisa Ling reports from Michigan.
These women, 6 Jewish and 6 Palestinian, have been meeting twice a month for over 20 years. They call themselves Zaytuna, the Arabic word for olive tree. Their motto, refusing to be enemies.
Every woman in the group here, I feel, is like a sister.
I don't even see Jewish or Palestinian anymore. I just see human beings.
The safety of this environment has allowed these women to remain committed to each other in the face of October 7th and after.
You absorbed
my pain as I absorbed your pain. It's important to just have a space, a place where everybody is there with open arms.
Have you all talked about ways in which you think that we could get to a better place?
There's room in a humanitarian way to recognize the trauma of the other. And people have lost that ability right now.
A message these women are spreading far beyond this room, including on college campuses, many of which have become deeply polarized. At the University of Michigan, two students, one Jewish and one Palestinian, started the Arab-Jewish Alliance more than a year ago to foster better relations between cultures.
I grew up Jewish, and the only time when I ever met Arab students was in my Arabic class. I was like, how can we bring Arab students and Jewish students together? And this kind of set us down this path.
I think like the week after October 7th, I was looking on like Twitter and I saw the rhetoric, the dehumanizing rhetoric. And so I thought, I want to like find a club where I can actually interact with people on the other side, because I hadn't had a chance to interact with people.
You are the future.
For the Zaytunas, these young students embody the mission they've spent decades building.
I think that when you meet a group like Zaytuna, who's been around for so many years, I think it reassures you that these friendships, they can last forever.
As a Holocaust survivor, this is what I learned. All human beings are the same. And if we could only realize that, then I think we could build a better world.
The power of conversation to inspire meaningful change. Lisa Ling, CBS News, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
In Vietnam, a billionaire accused in a multi-billion-dollar bank fraud has been sentenced to death. Jonathan Head is with the BBC.
The prosecutors believe that of that $44 billion, perhaps $27 billion may never be recovered. That is a staggering loss and will be very, very tough for the state bank to make up in terms of saving the bank. Really, the authorities have sort of blamed Chung Milan and have talked about the way in which she was bribing officials and the kind of sophistication of this network.
Paul Whelan, the American who has been imprisoned in Russia for more than 5 years, wants the U.S. to step up its battle to get him home. He called WTOP reporter J.J. Green and made an impassioned appeal.
Concerned his case might lose traction because it's an election year, Whelan wants to talk to President Biden.
You know, I put in multiple requests to speak to President Biden.
He says he's asked more than a half dozen times.
He does speak to my family, and he has spoken to my parents, but I'd like to speak to him personally.
If he gets that opportunity, he will tell it.
I still don't feel that everything that can be done is being done. I think there's a lot more that could be done.
A part of the reason Whelan is stepping up efforts to bring attention to his case is because Evan Gershkovich's so-called trial is ended, and Whelan believes a window is open to make a deal before Moscow potentially kidnaps someone else. J.J. Green for CBS News, Washington.
Track and field athletes who win gold at the Summer Olympics in Paris this year will bring home more than a medal. Those in other fields are hoping their sports get some green as well to give them a leg up.
U.S. sprinter Noah Lyles will be chasing top medals and world records at the upcoming Summer Games in Paris. But if the Florida native strikes gold on the track, he'll score an Olympic payout as well.
This is just a recognition that the athletes are the stars of the show.
Track and field will become the first sport to pay prize money at the Olympics, with World Athletics awarding $50,000 to each gold medalist in Paris, part of a $2.4 million pool covering 48 events.
Where possible, we want the athletes to remain in the sport. We want them to remain in a financially viable landscape.
While critics say sports stars shouldn't be allowed to cash in on the games, world high jump champion Yaroslava Mahuchik from Ukraine says the money helps support Olympic dreams.
It gives you more opportunity to continue training and to find some place where you can train, so it's really nice.
Since the launch of the modern Olympics in 1896, athletes have never received cash prizes from the International Olympic Committee. The IOC says it redistributes 90% of its income, and it's up to each sport how to spend its share of Olympic revenue. British swimming star Matt Richards wants his to be next.
I think it's fantastic. So I can only hope now that the World Aquatics of this world can start to follow suit and really start to protect their sports.
Opening a new era of accolades for the world's greatest athletes. Tina Kraus, CBS News, London.
One former Miss America is now running for office in Orlando. CBS's Peter King.
She was the first Black Miss Florida, and that led to this.
Miss America 2004 is Miss Florida, Erica Dunlap.
Later, a singer, a TV host, and TV contestant.
I loved being on The Amazing Race.
Born and raised in Orlando, Erica Dunlap is running to replace an indicted and suspended city commissioner who beat Dunlap for the seat in 2017. The district includes some of the city's most economically challenged areas. Dunlap's campaign says housing, public safety, education, health care, and local business development will be her priorities. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Coming up in the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keyes segment, nearly 100 shots fired in a fatal Chicago traffic stop. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Welcome to the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keyes segment, where every week we discuss issues including race. This week, Chicago's police department released video of the fatal shooting of a Black man after a traffic stop. We warn you, the sound is disturbing. That's just some of the 96 shots fired by five officers in just 41 seconds at 26-year-old Dexter Reed. Video shows that they kept shooting after he fell to the ground. An independent probe says initial evidence shows he fired first, wounding an officer in the arm. The plainclothes officer stopped Reed on suspicion of not wearing a seatbelt. We asked retired police Lieutenant Charles Wilson, chair of the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Officers, what he thinks.
It is a issue of another young Black man being killed by law enforcement officers. The Chicago incident, simply and solely based off of what I'm seeing in the body cam video that's been released, is troubling and brings to bear a number of questions that have to be both asked and sufficiently answered. Let's start with the idea that if this was a stop for a seatbelt violation, why was it a plainclothes unit making the traffic stop instead of a uniformed officer in a regular marked patrol unit? My next question would have been, why did they block his vehicle? If all this was supposed to be was a quote unquote routine traffic stop. You have to ask, with the amount of tint in the windows of his car, exactly how is it they determined that he did or did not have a seatbelt on? You know, over the course of my 45 years in law enforcement, I have worked patrol, I have worked traffic, I have worked narcotics, I have worked internal affairs. I've been at every level of the police profession. There just ain't no way this side of East Hill that I can sit and look at somebody's tinted windows and tell you they don't have a seatbelt on. It ain't happening. So my next question would have had to be, if this was a stop for a minor traffic violation, what was the reason for the officers to approach the vehicle with their weapons drawn in the first place? Now, it's being reported that Mr. Reed fired first. Okay, fine. If that is in fact the case, the officers were in fact justified to fire back. No questions asked, no arguments taken. But then you have to make a determination and answer, why was it that there were nearly 100 rounds fired? What was the justification for that? Now, if you had five people inside the car firing back with semi-automatic weapons, yeah, I can understand 100 rounds. But you had one person, supposedly one firearm, supposedly only fired once. So why the excess rounds? And based on the number of rounds and the type of weapons that the officers had, I would have to say to you that at least three of those officers reloaded twice.
And one officer apparently alone fired 50 shots. You just said if he fired at them, as they are saying, that them firing back is justified. But a lot of people from the family, from the civilian board in Chicago are just saying this was just beyond the pale. As an officer, do you think that this was bad training or is this a culture?
We as law enforcement are not trained traditionally to respond with that level of firepower, okay? We are in fact trained that if you fire on us, we will fire back at you, period. Stop. No questions asked, no arguments taken. You fire on a cop, you will be shot at. So people need to understand that and accept that as fact. What we are trained to do when we return fire or in fact fire at all is we are trained to fire at center mass. Okay. Here again, you've got a person sitting in the vehicle who allegedly fired a shot out the window, which precipitated a response from five officers to fire nearly 100 rounds of ammunition. In my mind, in my past experience, that's questionable.
And they fired, and they continued to fire after he was out of the car and on the ground.
Now, that's the other question I have. Why was it necessary or needful to fire at him after he was wounded and on the ground?
I've got to ask you, I know that your organization is about to offer some de-escalation training for police officers. Talk to me about what you're hoping to teach and whether it would avoid or at least lessen the number of incidents like this.
We are hoping, first off, the training itself is being offered in partnership with the Social Justice and Public Policy Ministry of Metropolitan Baptist Church and the University of New Haven, Connecticut. UNH got a $1 million grant from DOJ specifically to produce de-escalation training across the Northeast area of the country. One of my members is a member at the university. That's how we got tied into it.
And the training is happening in Maryland, right?
Yes, the training itself that we're currently sponsoring is being done in Maryland. We are of the hopes that of the various officers who will attend, they will learn better principles and tactics for interacting with people in the community, and particularly in communities of color. The training itself deals with
Situational
awareness, body language, distancing based on active and passive threats, verbal judo, procedural justice, crisis intervention, you know, and these are all topics and issues that every law enforcement officer needs to be able to successfully and appropriately interact with the people they serve.
Tell me, first of all, what's verbal judo? And when you say situational awareness, you mean in what happens when an officer approaches a person that's a possible suspect in the first place?
That's it. You know, what Navalio has consistently said to folks, we serve the community. So from the very first part of that, is the idea that everyone we communicate with, everyone we interact with, is due a certain level of respect and dignity. Everybody you come in contact with is not a criminal. So why would you treat everybody you come in contact with as a suspect or criminal, okay? That's why you look at the concepts of situational response, situational awareness. You need to be able to, yes, be aware as an officer, be aware of your surroundings and the environment that you're walking into, because you want to be able to go home that at night, you know, see mama the dog and have dinner with no complaints, no injuries. But you cannot constantly look at people as being someone you have to be aggressive with.
I've got to ask you, Lieutenant, if you could say one thing to officers across the nation that are looking at what happened in Chicago and frankly what has happened with, you know, plainclothes tactical units in other cities, what would you say to them?
I would say first, be very much aware of your surroundings. Unfortunately, our profession is not one that is open to a perception of fairness. And that typically because of the idiots that are still on our job. Most people don't realize that of the 800 and some odd thousand law enforcement officers across the country, male, female, black, white, and indifferent, all we want to do is go to work, do the job, maybe get a chance to help somebody out, get off with no bruises, no complaints, go home to mama, the dog, and have dinner and be able to get up, go to sleep that night and get up the next morning and go back to work. It's the idiots on our job that make it bad, not just for the community, but us as well. So we need to make sure as law enforcement officers that we make those people in charge of our dealings aware of who those idiots are so they can take the proper steps to get rid of them. Get rid of the idiots, then you get rid of the threat to the community and other law enforcement. We need to be sure that we treat people with respect. That's how we earn respect. When you talk about community policing, remember the first word in that, community. And it is the community that we need to engage to properly and safely do our job.
I've got to ask you briefly, and what would you say to members of the community? I mean, obviously, like you said, if you shoot at an officer, he's going to shoot back. But really briefly, what should people do if they are pulled over?
Stay calm. Follow the officer's directions. Make sure you are aware of what you're being stopped for, how to identify the officer if you decide that you want to file a complaint. Do not, under any circumstances, fight the officer. Do not, under any circumstances, run from the officer. Either situation will cause you grief to no end, because the officer is going to think right away, he did exactly what I thought he did in the first place. And he's going to take whatever effort he needs to take or feels need to take you into custody. If you find that you have a issue with the interaction, file a complaint with IAD. If need be, file a formal legal complaint, but under no circumstances. Do not fight with the police. Do not run from the police. That's going to get you hurt.
That was retired Police Lieutenant Charles Wilson at the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Officers. Coming up, why all eyes were on the sky this week. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. It seems people are very interested in cutting cheese. Sandwiches, that is. CBS's Stacey Lynn takes a closer look at a tasty treat.
According to a new survey commissioned by Pepperidge Farms, each adult downs about 36 grilled cheese sandwiches a year. Collectively, that's enough to fill nearly 900 Olympic-sized swimming pools or cover well over 29,000 football fields. As to what the hypothetical perfect grilled cheese looks like, overwhelmingly the type of cheese had to be American. The bread, white, medium toasted. And as for the best way to cut the ooey gooey toasty sandwich, the majority, 52%, said diagonally, 21% said vertically, and 17% said they don't cut it at all. Monsters. Stacy Lynn, CBS News.
City girl turned into country mouse and mad about the dulcet sounds of nature? You might think you can sue, but not so much in France.
So you live near a farm or move to one from the city and you hear this. Think you can complain about the noise? The French Parliament says nope, because those buying digs in the countryside can't demand that those already there change their way of life. Like these. And if you moved near an airport and claim you didn't see those planes, well, you should have taken a closer look.
This week, the nation took a page from Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Keep your head to the sky.
To see a perfect confluence of the sun and moon Monday, and people from parts of Mexico, the U.S., and Canada got a chance to see a total solar eclipse. CBS's Tony DeCopel got a close look along with millions.
Oh my goodness. It just got really, really dark here.
I am getting a chill right now. The wind is starting to blow. There's Venus.
After finding the path of totality, solar glasses at the ready.
Oh my goodness!
Millions of Americans looked up in wonder.
There it is. Look at the ring. Look at the ring. There you go.
Wow.
And the heavens sure did deliver.
Put that in a science book, but these kids got to see it firsthand.
In small town Kerrville, Texas, the clouds parted just in time for totality.
We can see it! We can see it!
The gloom also lifted when it mattered in Niagara Falls, New York.
I cannot believe we're seeing this right now. It has been cloud cover all day. How lucky are we?
It is a miracle.
It's incredible.
Do you see the corona?
Yes!
Do you see the sparkling lights?
And while darkness lasted less than 4 minutes.
Wow!
Welcome back! She came back!
The experience for first-timers like me now lives forever.
For days I've been asking people what it's like. Now I've seen it and I ask myself, I can't even describe it.
A moment of awe shared by so many of us together as one.
It kind of feels like we're bonded to everybody here. Like, we just went through something together.
Yeah.
I don't know these people, but, like, I feel some special, like...
Some connection, yeah.
Yeah, connection to them.
I have never seen anything like this before.
I don't want to wait another 20 years for it to happen again.
I feel like it'd be cool for, like, us to tell the future generation that we saw it and, like, what it looked like.
But when you look up at night hoping for stars and planets, in some places it's too bright to see them. Now there's a push to fix that.
Bright lights flash on Hollywood Boulevard and throughout Los Angeles. But the shine has a dark side, as the intense illumination from streets, homes, and businesses often block our view of the moon and stars.
There's a lot of light pollution down there. In the suburbs, in the city, downtown especially, you can't really see a lot.
The U.S. Department of Energy says about 83% of the global population lives in places where night skies are polluted with artificial light, meaning you no longer see the Milky Way, the galaxy our solar systems belong to. Astrophysicist Tim Thompson.
If you go back 300, 400, 500 years ago, everybody knew the sky. They all looked up and saw it. Now nobody knows the sky at all. People have lost touch with the sky as a natural resource.
At Los Angeles's Griffith Observatory, scientist Spencer Suhu gives people a peek at the galaxy.
And then you look off, you see four small stars.
Do you think we have lost touch with the sky?
Definitely. That's really sad.
He and other scientists say too much light at night is causing problems for humans, the environment, and animals.
It's bad for wildlife, you know, it interferes with bird migrations, animals that depend on the night skies for navigation.
But light pollution can also affect our health, with studies linking it to sleep disorders, depression, and obesity. 99% of people in the U.S. live in places that are polluted by light. L.A. County has a dark skies ordinance and has just launched a new campaign to get folks to dim the light, asking homeowners to point lights down, cover outdoor fixtures, and use timers, because this is the easiest type of pollution to fix.
Why is it so important for you to come out here and show this to people every night?
It's just really gratifying for somebody to look through a telescope for the first time and they see the moon or they see a planet, and it's like, wow.
A perspective that is truly out of this world. Joy Benedict, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Finally, in our heart of America, a long overdue honor for the millions of women who answered the call during World War II. CBS's Nicole Killian on Capitol Hill for the Congressional Gold Medal Ceremony for Rosie the Riveter.
In trademark red and white polka dots,
Rosie the Riveter, Rosie.
More than two dozen women representing Rosie the Riveter received recognition with a Congressional Gold Medal for working on the home front in shipyards and factories during World War II.
Remember these four little words, we can do it.
Accepting on behalf of the mostly centenarian group, 98-year-old Mae Cryer, an original Rosie who produced B-17 and B-29 bombers for Boeing in Seattle.
But a lot of women were treated poorly by the men. They resented having the women in there.
Marion Souce worked in a shipyard in Richmond, California.
Why is the recognition important?
You want to know that you accomplished something during your life. And I guess this is it. Although I raised six kids, and I think that's an accomplishment too.
Susan King was a riveter from Baltimore.
For the few of us still living, any time will do to prove to America that we were important too.
Trailblazing then.
We were doing it to save our country.
And now, Nicole Killian, CBS News, the Capitol.
That's it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your thoughts and story ideas to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. As always, you can find the program online on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. The Weekend Roundup is produced to the CBS News Washington Bureau. Sarah Fishman is a technical supervisor, and Alan Peng provides production assistance. Have a great week. I'm Allison Keyes, CBS News.
If you like CBS News Roundup, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus, starting May 1st.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.